Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Shaq Hyman. You ever heard that nickname before?
I have not until Saturday morning, when Sheldon Keefe spilled the tea at his morning availability before the Leafs-Oilers game. Because as you remember, Sheldon Keefe was Zach Hyman's first professional coach back with the Toronto Marlies. And he said during that season, they affectionately called him Shaq Hyman because he dominated the paint. And I have to say, because I did end up covering Zach for a number of years in Toronto, and those were days I was around the team every day, I never caught wind of that nickname until he was on the precipice of his 50th goal. And I think it's pretty apropos, don't you?
I mean, yeah, when you bring up the paint thing, because otherwise, Zach Hyman is the least Shaq-looking dude I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but that's why it's clever. This isn't like...
Yes, it
this
is.
This isn't the typical hockey nickname where we take someone's name and then end it like EY or whatever.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's true. It's not one of those boring ones.
I was going to say, at least when he's in Toronto, a lot of players called Zach Hyman Himes. You know, which is, you know, I would just say a typical hockey nickname. What I like about Shaq Hyman is that it invokes a little bit of creativity, tells you something about how he plays and what makes him unique from other players. And when you look at this season, honestly, it's perfect. I don't know if you've seen any of those goal charts from Hyman's season. Yep. Where it's like plotted where he scored.
I know exactly
from
what you're talking about.
And basically it's in the paint is where he scored most of those 50 goals that he's gotten this year. And I think as we are trying to understand, and I mean this with absolute respect because Zach Hyman's a great guy, you know, how this player at age 31 gets a 50 goal season. I mean, a big part of that story is his willingness and ability to drive hard to the net, obviously playing with line mates, you know, most notably Connor McDavid, a player who can control the game and get the puck to him at the net. That's how you get this season. I think he's at 50 goals and 19 assists, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, it's kind of an unusual stat line, you would say, but it's because he, you know, serves a particular function on that line, and he's had a fantastic year. And really, Zach Hyman is a great story. If you go back to his time as a kid, when he was looked over, even his first year at the University of Michigan, barely played at all, was not a lock by any stretch to make the NHL. And so the fact that he's found a way to make the NHL, to get better and better and better and better and have a 50 goal year. I know there's a lot of guys in his corner because he's been a popular teammate everywhere he's played.
You want to talk about unusual stat lines? Zach Hyman and Connor McDavid have the same number of 50-goal seasons.
Whoa. That's nuts. Now, Connor McDavid had a 64-goal season.
Yes, this is a stat that lacks some context, but still.
Yeah, well, look, at 50 goals is hard to get to. I mean, Austin Matthews only has two 50-goal seasons. Now, he would have had a couple more if it weren't for pandemics and the like that wiped it out. But the point is it's hard to stay healthy enough to have everything line up to score 50 goals in a season. I think it's a real achievement for any player. You know, Sam Reinhardt joined that club in Florida on Sunday as well, mixing up my days. And you know, it's a serious achievement. I don't know if he can get back there, but who would have ever predicted, even as good as last season was for Hyman, even his first year in Edmonton 2 years ago, I don't think many people would have predicted a 50-goal season for him, but he's just continued to put the puck in the net. It looks to me like he's going to get 80 points. There's an outside chance he threatens 60. I mean, it would take a very hot finish, but I mean, it's all gravy at this point, right? And so, you know, I'm curious to see how far he can push that total. But this is, you know, it's a pretty awesome season for a guy who, you know, what he signed for, $5.5 million, 7-year deal at Edmonton. I mean, he's an absolute bargain when you look at the production he's delivered for that team. And you know, I think some of the intangible aspects he brings to the game, he plays on specialty teams, he can log big minutes, he's, you know, sets a certain example and culture setter. I mean, he's the one that got away. Probably him and Nazem Kadri to different varying degrees. If you're a Leafs fan, those are the two guys. I think you just wonder what if, and maybe something might've been different had the team find a way to keep them.
I've noticed that in seeing how Leafs fans are with both of those players, it does seem as if there's still an affinity for Naz and for Zach Hyman. The next question I want to ask with regards to Zach is, what do you remember about when Zach signed that contract with Edmonton? Just what were your initial thoughts of that deal?
Well, there's a couple notable aspects to it. You know, he'd been injured in that year's playoffs, and, you know, he's obviously entering a summer where he was, you know, eligible for unrestricted free agency, but he really wanted to stay in Toronto, like into the off season. It wasn't one of those ones where the decision was made months and months earlier. And, you know, there were some discussions at that point in time. And I just don't think the Leafs could have done an 8-year deal with him, but I don't think they were willing to get anywhere near the same kind of money that the market was going to pay him. And so, you know, I think it's kind of a sign of respect, but what the Leafs actually did is grant him the ability, him and his agent, to talk to other teams ahead of July 1st. And what Zach ended up doing is he really only focused on one other team. That was Edmonton. And he and his wife flew out to Edmonton. They got a tour of the facility and basically had a deal worked out, you know, before July 1st came. You know, once they were comfortable seeing that as a community, they could raise their family, you know, because that was probably the most important thing to him, you know, even more than the hockey side. But I think from the hockey side, he saw a clear fit there. You know, Zach's a really smart guy. Probably didn't have to think twice when there was a possibility that a team wanted to sign you to a good contract and put you on Connor McDavid's wing. He probably knew before we did that was going to be a good thing for his career. And so, you know, it ended up being a pretty easy free agency in a sense. I'm sure emotionally it was difficult for him though, because Toronto's his hometown, right? And you know, he was a good hometown story. He lived in the GTA, you know, 365 days a year. You know, wasn't a player that spent the off season somewhere else. Like he embraced being here. Obviously has a big family, close to his siblings. I remember them always around, you know, the Leafs arena in those days. So, you know, that part would have been difficult, but you know, the Leafs did at least sort of do him a favor, I would say, when it was just clear there was no deal to be made, and let him basically shop him his services early. And, you know, he reached that deal with Edmonton. And I don't think either he or the Oilers have had, you know, a second thought about it since it was signed. I mean, he was productive from the minute he entered the door. You know, fortunately for him, he's been healthy there. And, you know, I think that we were all looking at this year's playoffs as another opportunity where Edmonton could win a cup. And they've had a couple, you know, runs since Hyman signed there. They went to the conference final his first year. They were in the second round last year, lost to the eventual cup winner both of those years. So, you know, for him, it's ticked the boxes. I think it's been a nice place for him and his two kids and his wife. Obviously they paid him at a level he wasn't going to get paid in Toronto, and you know, he's got a chance to win a Stanley Cup. And ultimately you add that to some of the personal milestones, and you can't really ask for too much more as a player in terms of being in the right situation.
I think someone for Ask CJ, mm-hmm. I need to double check this, but someone may have asked if you think Zach Hyman has as much of a chance for MVP consideration as his teammate, Connor McDavid. What say you to that?
I don't. I mean, and you know, I'm not hiding my own personal affinity for Zach. I think he's really a tremendous human being, but, and I think it's obviously been a great season, and I want to give him his flowers for that. But I mean, let's not overthink it here. I mean, Connor McDavid's probably going to have 100+ assists, only the fourth player in NHL history to hit those marks. You know, he could still lead the league in scoring. I know he's a little bit behind as we're recording this today, but nobody would be surprised if he just like strung together a couple 5-point games here between now and the end of the season. You know, it's, you look at the Oilers, and even as great as Leon Draisaitl is, Evan Bouchard's having a fantastic season. I mean, there's obviously lots of great performances to be found among the Oilers year, but Connor McDavid is the guy who stirs the drink. Let's not try and play 3D chess here when checkers will get us to the right answer.
I mean, it still would be like it would be a funny thing, you know, just to sit there with your bow and be like, man, does Zach Hyman deserve MVP consideration? But you're absolutely right on that. I mean, it's basically a 3-horse race at this point.
Yeah, I think it's Kucherov, MacKinnon, and McDavid is likely who you're choosing between. But, you know, I still will keep holding up Connor Hellebuyck as at least a possibility to be looked at. It wasn't a great weekend for Winnipeg, so, you know, maybe the argument gets watered down in the moment. But, you know, I think across the season, he's good. Look at what Nashville's doing. And just the crazy run that they have been on. And from what I hear, Roman Josi has really been the driver behind that. And so you wonder, is there a world where he can get into the consideration? I still think Austin Matthews has a chance at 70 goals. You know, not going to say that vaults him above the others, but he's certainly probably going to be on in the top five picks on a number of ballots this year. And, you know, I guess there could be another player or two that's really in the mix. But you're right. I think the big three, and then for me, the shadow list includes Hellebuck, Matthews, and Roman Josi at this point in time.
Not to hijack this and turn this into an awards conversation, but if you're willing to put Roman Josi in that discussion, does that mean you have him as your favorite for the Norris Trophy, where it seemed as if Quinn Hughes would be the favorite for that for most of the season?
No, because I think the two can be voted. As weird as it sounds, I do think that there's a way to separate it. And look, I'm not saying I have Roman Josi winning the Hart. I think he's injected himself in the conversation with, you know, his team appeared to be dead on arrival. And I think that 6 points in 16 straight games now, ever since they canceled the trip, the team trip to the Sphere, all Nashville does is get wins and points. You know, as much as Adam Wilde on the SDP just keeps trying to tell us that's a media narrative. I mean, it's hard to ignore the demarcation point where they got their shit together. I'm not saying it's just because of the Sphere, but obviously that was a big moment in their season where they kind of had to have a response or not, and the response has been positive. You know, I still think Quinn Hughes is probably the favorite for the Norris, but I know that you always want to ask me this stuff. I honestly don't pick, like, I have my pick on March 25th. You know,
no, and that's fine that you don't. I'm just curious about like how you have them ranked. I don't have like my pick, but I definitely treat it like a power ranking. I think like, okay, Kucherov's playing well now. Maybe it should be him. Oh, it should be McKinnon. Like that's what I'm getting at here. Fair. As opposed to you being like, give me your guy like right now.
I'm just saying, you know, the ballots are due on or about April 20th. We've still got, you know, it's not a long time, 3.5 weeks basically. But I don't know. And that for me, the Hart Trophy race, it's the hardest among those three for me to really differentiate between, you know, Kucherov's basically been in on half of Tampa's goals this year. You know, McKinnon has a point in every Avalanche home game and has just been an absolute monster. And remember, that team has, you know, played a big chunk of the season without Nichushkin, you know, when he was in the player assistance program. You know, Landeskog hasn't played in 2 years. Like they've had absences. Like I think he really has had to carry them for huge stretches. And then Connor McDavid's Connor McDavid. Like, as I just said to you, he's probably going to get 100 plus assists. A year after scoring 64 goals, he's going to have 100 plus assists. Like, we know, like, there's literally nothing he can't do. And I just think if you're ever at a point in time where you're putting Connor McDavid number one on your ballot, you probably didn't make a mistake. It's not to say he's going to win, but I mean, it's a really tough, it's going to be a tough decision unless something changes here drastically, which probably won't. All three of those guys are probably going to finish the year pretty strong, and then you're going to have to make your call. I mean, there's going to be a call we made on Connor Bedard and Brock Faber, you know, for the Rookie of the Year, the Calder Trophy.
Yes.
You know, it's
Joe Smith wrote about, tried to make the case for Brock Faber on Monday.
I didn't read that piece yet. I'm sure he did a great job with it. But, I mean, look, the argument, is, as far as I can tell, first of all, Brock Faber looks like an absolute stud. He's playing huge minutes for the Wild. And, you know, he's not going to have the points that Bedard does, but maybe there's a case to be made there. I mean, it's voting for the awards is not always easy and fun. I'll tell you that much. I mean, it's an honor, but it can be a pain in the side. What I will say back to your original question though, and with respect to Zach Hyman, I'm not putting him ahead of Connor McDavid on any kind of award type situation ballots.
Can I ask about another 50 goal scorer, Sam Reinhart of the Florida Panthers? I believe he's the second Florida Panther to do it since the Russian Rocket Pavel Bure. It's an interesting story with him. We were talking about Zach Hyman and his contract situation, and he settled in with the Oilers. Sam Reinhart is a pending UFA at the end of the year, and I feel like I don't feel as if enough people have talked about his situation or have inquired enough, or I don't know what the deal is, but how much money does he stand to make this summer with the way he's been performing this year?
Well, it depends if he wants to test free agency or not, right? And my sense is he's not particularly inclined to do that at this point in time. You know, Florida's a pretty good place to play, and you know, his career has taken off even more since he was traded there. you know, it checks the boxes. It's a competitive team. You've got lifestyle, you've got weather, you've got taxes, you've got teammates that are signed for a long time. Like I think the reason this probably hasn't been discussed, it's not just because the Panthers maybe don't get the same amount of press. I think it's also because there's a sense that there's not a lot of friction there, even though he doesn't have a new contract. Now, that being said, last I inquired on this, and it wasn't too long ago, it didn't sound like they were really anywhere in terms of being close to an agreement. But I just think ultimately he's probably going to have to take a little bit less on the AAV to remain in Florida. You know, what do you got Barkov at 10 million? Is that right?
I can double check that. But like, yeah, this is a team that has the weapons they have. And in order to stick around, you might have to take a pay cut.
Yeah. I mean, they also have the tax advantage like the Lightning do. And I'm not, you know, the Lightning have been able to establish kind of an internal payroll and, you haven't seen players get 11 and 12 and 13 million there because I think that they understood, first of all, as long as they played in Tampa, they were still in a pretty good spot favorably with the tax situation. And also they're on a good team and, you know, they just have the right vibe going. I think that's where the Panthers have gone. I mean, even that Gustav Forsling deal that they announced at the trade deadline, you know, his extension, he definitely could have got more money had he went to July 1st. And so I think with Reinhart, the best way to put it, Julian, is I still think everything points to them finding a way to get this done, you know, finding that sweet spot. I don't know if it's 9.5 million or maybe you could get to 10 and match Barkov. I just don't see him exceeding Barkov on that team. Whereas if he goes to July 1st, look, if he stays in Florida, you're talking about an 8-year deal, most likely.
Yes.
If he hits July 1st, you can only get that 7-year contract. But I think it's very plausible that someone goes above 10 million with them on the open market. It's hard to see him hitting the open market, but I will say this. I've started working on the free agency rankings and you know, they're not out. I don't know when they're dropping, probably not till April, but I've started chipping away at it. And Reinhart, probably not surprisingly, is going to be the number one free agent on the board unless he signs a contract extension before the rankings drop. But I think that it's fair to say he's in the best position of any pending UFA entering this summer.
10 million, you make Barkov money. 9.5, you make Matthew Tkachuk money. It's still pretty good.
Right. And I think that's basically probably the conversation ultimately when it gets time to do it is, and if he doesn't, you know, if he feels really strongly that it's not a good idea, I don't think the organization will bend on it. Put it that way. I think the organization sees Tkachuk and Barkov as the absolute pillars. And, you know, as much as Reinhart's had a great year and, you know, but he's getting close to 30, right? Like you know, the sum of that contract, if he does sign and end up signing an 8-year deal will be certainly some risk for the team just with age related decline. So I think that will be part of the give and take of the negotiation, but I have no reason yet to believe it's not going to get done. I think it's just too good of a situation. I mean, would you leave if you were him?
No, especially since they're still a cup contending team, I wouldn't go. Plus Florida. I mean,
yeah,
it's Florida.
And they just opened this new practice rink in Fort Lauderdale where guys drive in their golf carts to the morning skates and practice days. Like it's a pretty good life. Cause I would say the only thing working against Florida in prior years is the arena is kind of in an unfortunate place.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, if you go down there, you'd rather stay near Fort Lauderdale, be near the beach and all that scene. It's, you know, it can be 30, 40 minutes plus, even more if there's traffic, you know, commuting to the arena and back. And so that's kind of annoying. But now that they've even taken that out where they can do morning skates and practice days in Fort Lauderdale and you only just go to the arena for games. I mean, it's kind of like the LA setup. I mean, a lot of the LA players live in Manhattan Beach or around that area. And then they commute downtown to games. And that's the only time they really have to go to Staples. I mean, that's or crypto.com arena. But the, you know, same kind of setup, except the tax situation is much better if you're in Florida versus California.
I completely forgot. Staples renamed itself to, the crypto.
Me too. I caught myself mid answer there.
Also with Florida, I once have been to, it's not called FLA Live Arena anymore. I think it's called Amerit Bank.
That thing has changed so, much. Names. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But like I stayed at a hotel like right by the arena. There's not much to do in that part of the city beyond this mall that's around there.
There's a really nice mall there.
I didn't get to go to the mall.
There's a really nice mall. Like I'm not a shopper, but if you want to do shopping and certainly like there's like food options in that mall, but it's basically a big parking lot in the suburbs. Like it's like you're not in, other than the weather was nice, it's almost, you don't get the benefits of being in Florida if you're out in Sawgrass there.
Yeah.
I'll, or Sunrise, or whatever they call it.
So, I think it's Sunrise. Anyway, next time I go in that area, I need to pay a visit to the Elbow Room.
Dude, you need to stay at Fort Lauderdale and just suck it up.
Yeah. Just drive.
Like that's, there. I mean, I didn't last year. The only time I've gone down there and not done that is last year during the playoffs. Because during the playoffs, let's face it, work is more of the focus of the trip. So I stayed closer to the rink and just because it was convenient. But, you know, ironically, the Leafs stayed in Fort Lauderdale during last year's playoff series that I covered there. And they did. They didn't do morning skates. They just did their availability at their hotel. So I was doing the reverse commute that I was trying to avoid anyway. So
anyway.
We're boring people with logistics, but logistics are a big part of covering the league properly.
Absolutely, yeah. And people do want to know how cool it is to have these logistics be part of our lives, right? So it's not as if we're boring people anyway. I want to do a mini Leafs corner if we can. Is Ilya Samsonov okay? We saw him go down on Saturday against the Edmonton Oilers late in that game.
Yeah, I have no reason to believe that they're being untruthful when they say that it'll be fine, but you know, it's notable he didn't back up Sunday's game in Carolina. Now, the flip side of that is, why would you? You're carrying three goaltenders. This is an exact reason why, with Joseph Woll starting and Martin Jones serving as the backup on Sunday night in Raleigh. And, you know, Samsonov, this is twice now. Like, it was only a week and a half ago. He left a morning skate under similar kind of conditions to what you saw in Saturday's game, where he slid across and tweak something or I don't know, but he left the morning skate. Literally, it was reminiscent of what you saw during Saturday's game. And so it leads you to believe certainly he's not at 100% and that he's dealing with some kind of lower body related issue. And this is probably why you feel good if you're the Leafs that you got a couple other options, because, you know, Joseph Woll, you know, the Leafs lost in Carolina, but the fact that it only was a 2-1 loss, a big part of that is how well Woll played. And so you're starting to see him maybe round back into form. And, you know, the plan all along was to sort of split the starts the rest of the way and make a determination about who starts game one. I think it's back wide open. That's why I hate making declarations on that one. I mean, when I do Toronto radio hits, Julian, it's every hit nowadays is like, who's going to start game one? I was like, well, like, let's see where we're at on April 18th when, you know, the Leafs have played their last regular season game. And we actually, you know, are going into that playoffs. But I think it's very likely, you know, the Leafs, like a lot of teams, are going to use multiple goaltenders this spring. I mean, there's maybe even a world you see Martin Jones in a game. It's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility given his long track record and the fact that Samsonov isn't at 100% and that Joseph Woll has only played like 30 NHL games. So, I mean, I think the Leafs are comfortable in the totality of their goaltending, but it's not as though they don't have one horse they're riding here. It's, they got to get to the finish line and figure out who's the lead horse.
Aren't you glad you work for a company that isn't going to take anything that you say and put it into a nice clip to be seen on social media?
What did I say there?
No, you didn't say anything.
Did I radio myself?
No, you made a joke about how, like, on Toronto radio, like on Toronto radio, you get asked about like Leafs goaltending, and you're like, ask me on April 18th. But like, you know, if you say something of the sort here, it's going to happen on the SDPN.
Yes. Yes,
I was trying to make a joke about that.
I do appreciate the STPN does not radio me on my own show too often. They don't take me out of context on my own show, but I do appreciate that, producer Nick, producer Drew, whoever's responsible for that. But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, that's kind of the old radio game was that they try to get people like myself on there and they try to get us to say something that they can splash. That was basically the game. Seriously. I mean, I don't know where radio is at these days. I don't listen to radio too often, but
damn. Okay. All right. You know,
well, even the radio, I listen to Overdrive, but I listen to it in podcast form nowadays. Like I don't actually like tune in on the radio.
But that is how a lot of people consume radio. You are right.
I mean, cause what's the difference? It's basically, we're talking about consuming people talking about sports. So whether it's on a podcast or it's officially packaged in a radio show, it's still the same thing.
Does your car have an AM? Your car has an AM radio.
Yes. Does yours not?
Yeah, mine does. I mean, we're not at a point where AM radios are being discontinued out of cars, right?
I don't think so. But I honestly, I'm barely in my car. Like, you live near enough to downtown Toronto. Like, I go weeks at a time without driving my car.
I've been in your car, like, so, once.
Yeah. Like, I have a car, and I've driven you somewhere. But, like, in general, Like, I'm not kidding. This week, I'll go downtown, at least play two home games. I'll go down to morning skates using the subway and back. I'm going this weekend for Easter in Coburg. It'll be the next time I'm in my car, probably driving to out to Coburg. So,
Easter
plans. But I mean, in all seriousness, I that's the other part is I'm just not in the car as much as, you know, you live in different places or you commute to work. And when I commute on the subway, I just listen to podcasts usually.
Including Overdrive when you get a chance.
Yeah. No, I love Overdrive, seriously.
No,
What I like that they do is they break their show into hours. They even break them into segments with certain guests. So sometimes if it's just like a certain guest, I'll just listen because it's someone I like or I'm interested in what they have to say or whatever. I think they do a good job with it.
While we're talking about podcasts, if you haven't already, subscribe to ours. If you haven't done that,
Be promoting other people this long or what?
I was about to say, we forgot to do that. We might as well promote ours. Anyway.
I bet it's times like this, Nick wishes he had like a buzzer and he could zap us. We're like, enough of that, you two.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're definitely making him pull all of his hair out. Anyway, did you watch any of the Colorado-Pittsburgh game on Sunday? Nate,
was that a bald joke?
Was that a bald joke on producer Nick?
Yeah, that's a low blow. Why is he catching strays?
I just made a joke. It's not a big deal. Like, is producer Nick mad about that? Is he pissed?
I'm defending his honor.
Okay, it's okay. All right, Nick's going to be okay. All right, like he been bald for a minute. Like, he good. It's all right.
He just texted the group chat, I quit.
He just wrote
too much
asshole.
Okay. Too much harassment from the host of the show.
Okay, producer Dick, I just want to issue an apology. You could put some nice music over this if you want, but I apologize for making light of the lack of follicles upon your head top. It's not a laughing matter, and I should have been more sensitive to your condition. I'm sorry.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Silence there. All right. We're good. We've done enough. Did you watch Colorado-Pittsburgh yesterday?
I did. I caught the third period, which is probably that's the game in a nutshell, third period and overtime, because it was 4-1 when I turned it on and it ended up 5-4 in Colorado's favor coming all the way back. And, you know, a lot of interesting dynamics there. I mean, let's not make too much of one game, but obviously Nathan McKinnon's historic run this season continues with a point in every single Avalanche home game, which is just kind of mind blowing at this stage. The fact that he's there against his childhood buddy, Sidney Crosby, who had 4 points in his own regard, helped create all four of Pittsburgh's goals and scored one. And yet the Avalanche, you know, roll on and win again. And you just wonder where it leaves everybody, don't you? I mean, I don't think there's anything to advance on that conversation. But, you know, one thing I'll point out is that maybe hasn't been discussed too much, but Sidney Crosby, in all 18 of his previous NHL seasons, finished at better than a point per game player. He entered yesterday's game, Sunday's game, exactly at a point per game, but that 4 point game might be enough to just ensure he's going to make it 19 seasons in a row. And if he does, that will tie Wayne Gretzky for the all-time record of most consecutive point per game seasons in the NHL.
Insane. Pretty crazy. That is an insane record.
Do you know what? I'll tell you this. I was at the GM's meeting last week and Doug Armstrong was speaking, obviously Canada's GM for the 2026 Olympics. And someone did ask Doug, like, do you want to put Sidney Crosby on the team for sentimental reasons? Like, kind of like that was the gist of the question. It was not my question.
Right.
But Doug basically said, like, I watched Sidney Crosby. He is still on there by sure for merit. He's like, I don't look to make a problem where there isn't one. There's no problem there. Like, he's like, he's a world-class player. And like, it's, you know, I think it's easy to look past it, but 19 years at the top of the game, the way he's been is pretty, pretty impressive stuff. I mean, obviously there's been some fall off in his game from his absolute peak as an individual player, but he's still getting the job done out there.
Yeah, the idea of Sidney Crosby not being on any of these, whether it's the four-team face-off or an Olympic team, we're not at that point yet of writing off Sid off of any of these teams. No, sir. No.
No, I can give you that breaking news headline. Like, Crosby expected to be on 2026 Olympic team.
Just have the lower
based on that
crawl.
Doug Armstrong.
Oh yeah,
comment. For sure. Now, I will say though, in 2026, that's his age 39 year, right? He's born in 87. And I'm not predicting anything, but it's still 2 years from now. Like, it's just, I think everybody hopes he's still playing at a level, every Canadian, that he could be there. I mean, it's pretty cool to see him play with the next generation, right? I mean, that Olympic team most likely will include Bedard and McDavid and Crosby, kind of like, you know, it's sort of like, I wish we had a Gretzky Crosby team. It just didn't quite come to be. Or even Lemieux Crosby, you know, like, it's just kind of cool to see the generations bridged on one national team. I think, and you could say the same for all the other countries too. I mean, that's part of what makes international play so cool, is that you do get the feeling like there's like a baton being passed through the years. So it's not Crosby's fault. We would have already definitely had at least one Crosby McDavid team, if not potentially two. Like, if they had gone to the 2018 Olympics, I'm pretty sure you would have had one, but certainly 2022 would have been that. And now we see if 2026, I don't know how many players will be left over. Like, it's actually an interesting conversation. Like, if we looked at the Sochi team, how many players will be back that were part of that? Crosby might be the only one. I mean, you have to think like maybe like a Drew Doughty has a chance. But there's not a lot. Like, it's, you know, a chunk of that team's already retired. I mean, maybe John Tavares was on that team. The outside chance he's there, maybe. Like, but point being is there will not be many returnees, you know, 12 years later. So, you know, I'm pretty confident saying Crosby will be there wearing the C, but 2 years is it passes quickly, but it's also a long time at that age, just hoping that he can perform at the highest level still.
Yeah, a lot can happen in 2 years.
He also doesn't have a contract for that season.
Yeah. I mean, he might be a Colorado Avalanche by then.
We'll see. I actually kind of hope he goes and plays somewhere totally random that we're not even thinking of.
Come on down, Sidney Crosby. You are a Seattle Kraken.
Because seeing some of the discussion about this, I've been asked about it on a few different pods when I've appeared as a guest. Like, it feels like everybody is thinking, if not Pittsburgh, then Colorado. There's been a little bit of like Montreal as a wild card, just given that he grew up cheering for the Habs and they obviously could probably use a center as they're moving into their window where they hope to be more competitive. But I haven't seen too many other teams suggest it. I just like, it would be even more fascinating if he went to some, shows up in Tampa or something, or like just goes and plays somewhere that no one's calling.
Or Vegas. Sidney Crosby in Vegas would be the ultimate heel turn. An absolute good guy playing for the most despised franchise around the league. It would be
come
a heel
on.
Turn.
There's a lot of good guys playing in Vegas.
I'm not saying there aren't, but
I like that team.
I like that team too. We both are guys who don't care about how much people hate Vegas, but you know that people would groan and be like, how are they doing this?
Yeah, there's a lot of jealousy of their success.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I don't think they're like evil people or something populating the
Golden. To be clear, I'm not saying they're evil people. It's just, I mean, then again, depending on which
see,
NFL
we could radio you. If we could equip that in a way that that we could like have all of Vegas out for blood for Julian McKenzie.
Oh no. I you know what? That would actually be I would actually have people on my side with that. No, I'm kidding. No, there's no evil.
What about Sid in Nashville?
Does he look like a Nashville guy? Is he a country guy?
I don't know if he's a country guy. I just think like that's a team that should still be pretty good, but like could probably use like help down the middle, would probably have the cap space to make it work. This is a fruitless thought exercise, but I'm just trying to think of like a random place he could end up where we'd all just be like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Detroit.
Ooh.
Team on the rise that needs that veteran to help him get over the top.
You could have Crosby and Patrick Kane on a line. I mean, that would have been pretty good in 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly, though.
I'm not saying it wouldn't be good now, but like it would have been really good 10 years ago.
Buffalo. Sidney Crosby and Buffalo.
I don't see the fit.
No. Okay. All right, fine.
Florida.
I thought Florida for a second too, but like
Dallas. I'm just thinking of all the places that most players want to go to when they have the leverage.
Yeah, that's it, right? I don't know. I mean,
I think we can rule out the Canadian teams. Like I just think that that would be a level of chaos that he doesn't need to invite into his life.
Sidney Crosby as a Montreal Canadian would be the wildest thing for that market in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't had much wild, like it's been pretty boring in Montreal, let's face it. I mean, it's been a teardown, and like, when was the last time they were really competitive?
I mean, as a legit competitive team, you'd have
to... I know they went to the cup final.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's exactly what
even
I
that was like kind of a weird...
That was weird.
It just was a weird year. It was pandemic times. Like, I'm not holding that.
No.
Like, it's not their fault it was pandemic, but like the stands were empty or near empty. Like,
you have to go back to the 2010s for that. Like, the probably the year they went to the conference final and lost against the Rangers, and Carey Price got hurt partway through. And even then, like, I mean, I can go all day on this, but like, those teams were inherently flawed, but they were competitive.
Now, that being said, I did read Arpin Basu's piece on the weekend.
Great job.
But the Canadians have a lot of promising defensemen on the horizon, you know, to the point, as Arpin was making in his piece, that they'll probably have to trade one or two this summer just because the numbers don't add up when you have that many players that are going to need minutes to play and develop, and they can't all make the team. And so, you know, they have, I think Kent Hughes, since he's come in, has done a nice job with some of his trades in terms of getting good value back for players. You know, the Monahan swap is the most obvious, where he got a first round pick to take him and then added another one to trade him away to Winnipeg. So, you know, you would think that they should be getting closer to, you know, the horizon where they're trying to win the cup again or trying to be a playoff team again. But I just don't know if Sidney can join that, a team like that, if they haven't made the playoff. Like, yeah, he can do whatever he wants, but you got to feel like if he's leaving Pittsburgh, which is still a huge if, he's probably going to a sure thing contender, I would think.
Yeah, he wants as much of a chance to win the Stanley Cup as he can get.
Yeah. Imagine he replaced John Tavares in Toronto.
You just said he doesn't want to invite that type of madness in his life.
No, you think of the
most mad situation he could ever put himself in?
Yeah, I have no indication or inclination that he'd want to do that, but I'm just saying, imagine.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to put a cap on the imagination quarter for today, because
okay. We're
going to let ourselves run too wild on where Sidney Crosby could play. I would like to check in on his goal-scoring rival, though, and another one of his teammates. We should do a bit of a pulse check on the Washington Capitals, who are in that race for a playoff spot. And now, when it seemed as if we thought he would lose his goal-scoring powers, Alexander Ovechkin is on a tear, a 5-game goal-scoring streak. He scored multiple goals in multiple games during this streak as well. He's inching closer to that Wayne Gretzky record. What have you made of Ovechkin's recent uptick in play?
Well, let's face it. He spent the first half of the season looking like he was getting close to toast. Like, I don't have the exact numbers, but he had like 10 goals at the halfway point of the year, maybe even a little less than that. And what that did is it at least opened the window or the door or the thought that, hey, we all sort of thought this was just going to be a foregone conclusion that he would surpass Wayne Gretzky's goal-scoring record in the NHL. Maybe not. Well, now he slammed that door shut. That's how I view it. And, you know, the fact he's now well on the way to a 30-goal season, you know, that's the kind of output he needs to ensure that he gets there. What is he, 45, 46 behind? You know, you never know. As I mentioned in the Crosby discussion, every year you can't take for granted that a player will be able to keep competing. But it looks like Ovechkin's found that level again and still has the shot. And, you know, I think he's probably energized a little bit by the fact the Capitals are truly in a playoff race. And it's really been a strange thing to watch play out. I mean, Detroit a month ago looked like they were going to be a certain playoff team. They've hit the wall here a little bit, and it's opened the doors for teams like the Capitals, the Islanders, you know, in this race. The Flyers obviously are in pretty good position now too, as a result of all that. And so, yeah, I think that it's back to being like, oh, okay, this seems like a foregone conclusion. Ovechkin's going to break and surpass that record, and, you know, be quite a thing for a team that has traded players away at the last two trade deadlines, you know, veteran players, and obviously Anthony Mantha, Joel Edmondson among those dealt at this year's deadline. And with a younger team, you know, it's also a year that they've moved on from Kuznetsov, who was part of so much of the success that Ovechkin have. Obviously, early in the season, Nicklas Backstrom walked away from the Capitals, physically couldn't go. You know, like they've really moved beyond what was the heart of the team that dominated from the, you know, basically the mid 2000s to, you know, winning the cup finally in 2018. You know, they had a good long decade plus run there, and they've moved past that team, and only Ovechkin remains. And haven't even mentioned Charlie Lindgren, who's just further proof that goaltending is voodoo, because he's having a tremendous year and has surpassed Darcy Kemper, who was a big free agent signing for them in terms of, you know, playing time and during this stretch. And I have no idea if they're going to get in, but it does seem to me anyways, it's just hard to imagine Ovechkin not finding a way to get that record. I mean, still a lot of goals, but he looks like he's still got enough to squeeze out 30 plus this year. And if he does the same next year, then you're looking, you know, that the following season would be where he's going to be in position to pass Gretzky.
Yep. And sticking with the Capitals, Tom Wilson not going to appeal that 6-game suspension he was given a couple days ago for the high stick on Noah Gregor of the Leafs. Not a big surprise there. Deserving it. I'm more surprised that the Department of Player Safety gave him that suspension.
Really? You thought it would be shorter, or?
Just, we've seen Tom Wilson do all these things and get away with it. I got comfortable in my head thinking that he wouldn't get anything.
Right. I mean, there was that situation late in the season against the Rangers, you know, where he started a melee, kind of punched the back of Buchnevich's head when he was still with the Rangers, when he was face down, and there was a dust up with Panarin and he got the $5,000 fine. The Rangers put out a statement,
yeah,
you know, saying that George Parros was unfit to continue in his role as the director of player safety. I mean, pretty wild time. The Rangers got fined, I think, $250,000 as an organization for that statement. Yeah, and the weird thing about the Wilson play, like, obviously, it's a reckless play with his stick, but I don't think anyone, including Noah Gregor, believes he was trying to actually do that exactly as it happened. So 6 games is a lot, but, I mean, he's been suspended now 6 times in the league. You know, you're in Brad Marchand territory where there really isn't much benefit of the doubt, even though it's been a couple of years since he's been on the radar, you know, had an incident like this that's on the player safety's radar. I just think the significant rap sheet that comes with Tom Wilson is he's got to be extra careful. And when he crosses the line, here we are. And yeah, I think he just deemed it not worth the trouble to stretch it out and try to, you know, plead to the commissioner and take it to a neutral arbitrator. I mean, he's just going to take his medicine. And his total fines and suspensions, Julian, are almost $1.5 million now over his career. So there was an 18-month window in 2017 and 18 where I think he was suspended 4 different times. He had multiple different sit-downs with Parros, like where Parros flew and like showed him video and tried to, you know, they were trying to preemptively avoid future hits and make sure he understood where the line was. I think he's improved from that point. But then you get this case where he swings his stick wildly, catches Gregor in the mouth. He apologizes immediately. Like, you can see it in his body language. Gregor later told reporters just that Wilson apologized. Like, I don't think it was on purpose, but you're responsible for your stick. And that, in that case, I mean, fortunately, Gregor didn't miss. He lost a couple teeth, but he didn't miss a game or anything like that. And, you know, Wilson's going to pay a pretty hefty price then.
But you get why I was a bit surprised at that, right? Like, I'm glad you mentioned that incident at the beginning where he went full on crazy on the Rangers, because that happened, and well, you know what happened after that. But like, even the stick thing, I can't, like, it looked bad, but I thought it looked accidental. So I thought, okay, well, it's Tom Wilson again, but he just, for whatever reason, the Department of Player Safety, I mean, we've questioned how consistent they've been over time. So I had every reason to expect that they would be inconsistent again with Tom Wilson. And sort of how I felt with Jacob Trouba earlier this year, where he had a stick swinging incident of his own, and then he got suspended for a random small thing. In my head, I'm thinking, okay, this is where you throw the book at Tom Wilson? Like, that's just how I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. The Department of Player Safety has given out some pretty sizable suspensions this year on incidents that involve a stick to the head. You know, we got this one. We got David Perron 6 games for a cross check, the Morgan Riley 5 games for a cross check. There was a couple 4-game suspensions this season. You know, I'm not saying that we can't go incident by incident and raise questions about, you know, the work that's being done by that department. But I think in totality, if you step back, you're seeing a bit of a higher standard, in my view. I mean, they might argue this has just always been the standard and there's more incidents. But, you know, they haven't been afraid to give, you know, 4, 5, and 6 game suspensions. First of all, it's a chunk of the season. It's a chunk of money. I think Tom Wilson was 160 grand on this incident alone. And so, you know, it's pretty punitive to players who receive that. And, you know, I think they're trying to dissuade future incidents. And let's hope for Tom Wilson's sake, he doesn't have one, because the next suspension could be monster at this point. Like, no matter what it is, I just feel like the pattern of behaviors doesn't work in his favor.
Okay. It is now time for Ask CJ. We've got some questions from our listeners on Twitter and Discord. We're going to get to them as much as we can.
Shout out Discord.
Shout out Discord. Join the SDPN Discord. It's a lot of fun. Some great fans over there. And you can, it's one place you can drop your questions for Ask CJ. Let's start with this question from Roderick, one of the many Discord users we have. Question for both. Do you have all the articles and reports you've backed up, you've written, backed up somewhere on your computer? I am a student journalist at Centennial College, and as I get my first bylines published, I wasn't sure if I should be creating backups of my work because I worry the clutter would be too much to handle.
Roderick, I do not. But I think if there was a way you could do that, it would probably be helpful. You know, because it's funny. There's two aspects to it. One of it's just nice to have a record of your work, maybe from even a legal standpoint or something. If any question came up about your reporting, you know, the more that you could have saved in backup, I think could help you. But the other part is sometimes I'm like working on a story and I'll be like, oh, I remember that this guy told me this, whatever, 2 years ago. And that quote might be useful context. And so I'm constantly searching back for old quotes or old work I've done. And so I've done a terrible job of cataloging my work. I'd say the last 3 or 4 years I have everything saved, but you know, I'm at about year 20 now of being a published reporter, and I haven't been able to do that. So I would recommend backing up if you can, but in full honesty, I've not done a very good job myself. What about you, Julian?
I've put some of my old work on an old website that I used to update. I don't really update it anymore. Recently, with the shutdown of Vice is not really a thing anymore. I know I had to go on one of their sites and I just saved some old articles I wrote there as PDFs. So I do that sometimes. Yeah, I haven't done the best job of that, but I think it's not a bad idea to save your work as a PDF when it's published. Save it in a file somewhere. If you're able to put it up on your own personal website so people can see it, that's a good idea too. Yeah, it's just a good idea to save some of that stuff, especially if it ends up on a website that you're really proud of the article, or you're really, it's a big deal for you to be published on that website. So
yeah,
we totally would advise for that.
And I got a lot of that from when I was younger, like when I was first getting an article in the Globe and Mail or something. And I have some of the physical newspapers, especially from early in my career when I had a story I was proud of, or maybe, as you mentioned, just it was like a rare thing for me to be in that thing. And you know, that's, you want to keep some of it, but also, I don't know, I try to have like no clutter in my life. So I don't want to, you could be hauling around boxes and boxes of stuff when you get this deep into a career, if you're keeping everything.
Do you have any of your old articles framed?
Yeah, my dad got a couple framed. I think they're at his house. Cobra Papa, shout out. But
shout out.
Not really. I don't know. Like, it's like I'm of two minds about it. It's cool, obviously. And there's definitely stories over the years I've been proud of. But like at the same time, like, are you really going to hang your own work on your own wall? I don't know. It just seems.
It's a good shot. It's a good pull.
But I'm not taking a shot at you. Like, I think it's like, you know, I guess if you have an office or, you know, a man cave, whatever, like it might be appropriate down there. But I don't have anything hanging on the walls of my house that I've written.
That's a really good, I know you did BS and shot, but that was just funny. You just landed to that. I was like, yeah, I do.
But don't get me wrong, I've kept all my media passes or a lot of them from over the years. Like, I've, you know, I've obviously collected things and I just think it the stuff from the start of your career will probably be more valuable to you as you get later in life and you want to look back. But like when you're living it, it's easy to get busy and not have all that stuff backed up. And that was really the original spirit of the question. So anyway, yeah. That I promise you that was not a shot. I did not like look over your shoulder and realize.
No, not a shot. It's not a shot.
But I do have some things framed, but they're in like my dad's basement, basically.
That's fine. It's not a shot. We actually like each other. Jolting Z, as a fellow Blue Jays fan, let's talk Joey Votto. With his sprained ankle and him presumably joining the Buffalo Bisons on a rehab stint eventually, and with the Jays position player roster being completed earlier today, they sent this yesterday, what is your prediction on his season as well as the team?
Well, everyone, I'm well on record as saying that I am not beginning this season with a lot of hope for the team. One of the things I would look forward to, though, is the possibility of Joey Votto joining the Blue Jays at some point. And, you know, even if he's just playing DH a couple of days a week or whatever it would be. I mean, obviously, there's at this point in time, unless they run into injury issues or underperformance issues, there's not an apparent spot for him, I don't think, on the Jays roster. But I think he's going to get there. I mean, it seems like he's got a great attitude about it. You know, he said in multiple interviews that I've read or heard that he's comfortable playing anywhere in the organization they want him, whether that's double A or even below, to get at bats, to get up back up to speed. And I just think with his history and his drive, I think we're going to see him play for the Jays at some point this year. And despite Julian, I will say, despite my trepidation about the season as a whole, I started to get excited yesterday when I realized how soon the home opener is and the fact that I've got tickets to that game. So I will be going to the first Jays game. I know they start on the road with a couple series, but is that next week, April 8th? I will be
getting closer and closer.
I will be there for the game. So I'm still supporting the Jays. I don't know. I want the front office cleared out.
Yeah. Not inspiring a lot of confidence, huh?
No. And just, yeah. There's nothing I can say here without, I'm going to turn into a ranting lunatic, but just frustrated by their offseason. Although it looks like they dodged the bullet with Shohei.
That's kind of wild because literally the next question I was going to read is, did the Blue Jays dodge a bullet by not getting Shohei Ohtani? That was literally the next question I was going to read. I don't know if you like looked at
it. I didn't look it up, I promise you.
That's scary.
That is scary.
The next question.
But I'll say this on the Ohtani thing. I mean, look it. I don't see any world where he actually isn't somewhat complicit in this. I've never had $4.5 million in a bank account to transfer. But even the smaller amounts, much, much smaller amounts in my life that I've had to transfer. Like if you send $10,000 somewhere, it would be hard to do that from someone else's account if you're not involved. So I just refuse to believe. Plus, not to mention the way the story has changed and the interpreter. Like, I don't know if you're paying attention to the blow by blow of this, but like, I'll say this. I'm not saying Shohei made the bets, but he absolutely knew the money was going to a bookie to cover. Like, I don't see any way around that. You can't transfer $4.5 million out of someone else's account and not have him notice. It's just not, it's like the way banking rules work. It's just not possible for me to believe that. And so that doesn't mean he's going to get a major suspension though. And so as much as I say, dodge the bullet, I still think he's going to be playing games for the Dodgers this year. And you know, he is the reigning AL MVP. So they probably didn't dodge a bullet, but can you imagine the Jays finally get him and then he gets caught up in a gambling, yeah, you know, related
his translator is, all these inaccuracies and they're saying he kept saying that he's from this one university. They don't have record of him. There's something off about that guy in all of this. I mean, obviously, but like for Shohei to get wrapped up in all of this, like I'm a bit disappointed, honestly.
How about the MLB investigation being launched at like 6 p.m. Eastern on Friday night? Like just the oldest trick in the book, like just put out this innocuous press release, like after business hours at the end of the week.
We're all watching March Madness. Or the women's tournament. Oh, actually, both of them are March Madness, really. Like, and then you decide to drop this? Yeah.
I don't know. It just, the whole thing smells fishy. You know, I wanted Ohtani to be a Blue Jay, obviously. But, like, look, I think he's involved in this. And I also wonder, like, how did the translator rack up $4.5 million in debts? Like,
I have no idea. Well, we'll have more clarity, apparently, on this today, because I believe Shohei is supposed to speak on this today.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to say nothing. It's all PR now. Like now it's up to the investigation. Like now they've had like a week to like, he's finally going to break his silence. I would love to know though. I would be very rich. I'd love to know how it's possible someone without him knowing could get $4.5 million out of his bank account. and wire it to a bookie running an illegal operation. Like, he is involved. Again, I'm not saying he placed the bets. I'm not saying he instructed the bets, but he knew he was sending money there. Like, you just can't get that kind of money sent to. Anyway, it's really hard to wire money.
It very much is. You know, we should just, you know, we have to just wait and see. We have to wait and see the results of the investigation. These are just hunches, not definitive, you know, I don't know, just trying to cover whatever legal base we have, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just saying I don't, that story doesn't hold water to me. I need to see some receipts here because I don't buy it.
It's sus. Anyway, I love when CJ goes in on baseball corner. We need to establish a baseball corner because you get a real CJ. That's as close as, I mean, you get real CJ on all these episodes, but that's real, like, you're at a bar, it's 2 a.m., he's yelling, like, this is CJ.
The question is if the Jays are, like, 6-3 after the first, like, week and a half of the season, am I just going to be like, yeah, everything's great? Like, how quickly am I going to turn to a believer from a skeptic? Because I'm definitely a skeptic entering the season.
If they're 6-3, judging by when the schedule of the games are, that'll probably get a little close to when the Masters start. You should be the happiest man.
Oh my God.
At that point.
Like, I'm already excited about the Masters, like, weeks out. Like, I can, like, feel it, like, the enthusiasm in my body. Like, I'm like, oh my God. Masters, start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, this, you know, baseball's back. Like, we survived winter, bud. Although we just got hit with snow last week here in Toronto. But we survived winter.
We did.
We did it.
We did it. With all the excitement to come with the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Masters and the Blue Jays, all of that stuff. We'll get to it here on the CJ Show. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show. We'll be back on Thursday with a brand spanking new episode of our great show. CJ, we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Right on, Shaq.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie @JKA McKenzie.